I am committed to keeping you in this game, no matter how much you hate, detest, and fear the stock market. And I recognize that for many of you, the level of loathing is off the charts. I mean, what's it like, frankly? If the two huge crashes in the decade from 2000 to 2009 weren't enough to turn you off, then the fact that stock movements appear increasingly untethered from reality, a lot of it's because of these high-frequency traders. They scalp stocks, make a few pennies off countless trades. Well, that'll do the trick, right? Who wants to pick stocks when the already gossamer-thin connection between share prices and the fundamentals of the actual underlying companies often seem to have been severed? Again, courtesy of some ETF-driven trading that causes whole sectors to trade in lockstep as though, well, individual stocks were commodities, like lumber, like wheat, rather than equities. I get it. You're mad as hell at the stock market, and you're not going to take it anymore. Now, there is a lot to be angry about, and we've had plenty of terrifying moments in the not-too-distant past. So how come I'm still defending the notion of investing in individual stocks to augment your paycheck? Why am I telling you that you must stay in the game? It's not just because I'm a stock televangelist, of which I'm willing to admit. No, not at all. If I thought there was something better than stocks, believe me, I'd be preaching about that instead every darn day. But I have no vested interest in telling you you have to own stocks. But here's the truth. The market might be frustrating and terrifying for many of you, but believe it or not, it also is still the best place for you to make money. And that's what I'm all about. That's the mission of the show, making money. Help me try to profit any way I can to augment that paycheck. You can't afford to become blind to the many opportunities that the market throws your way. That's why tonight I'm showing you how to analyze some of the biggest, most important themes that have given people huge gains in the past and should continue to produce terrific returns in the future. Look, we have to hope the past is prologue. Now, when it comes to racking up profits, dividends are the single most significant factor out there. Yep, dividends. I know, dullest of the dull, staple of investing for retirees and a subject that's guaranteed to put most people under the age of 40 to sleep or maybe even a comatose position. Why talk about soporific dividend-paying stocks first instead of those sexy, fast-growing momentum plays that get investors really excited? Simple. In the words of famed bank robber Willie Sutton, because dividends are where the money is. Going back to January of 1926, roughly 40% of the total return from the S&P 500, 40%, yep, came from reinvested dividends. Nearly half of the long-term gains from stocks are from dividends. Why aren't they talked about more? I'm bringing them back. What do I mean by reinvested dividends? When a company pays you a dividend, that's money in your pocket. But the best way to handle that money is not to use it as income to support yourself. No. That may make sense for the retiree crowd. No, what you want to do is take that money, reinvest the dividend in the stock to take advantage of what's known as the power of compounding, like compound interest, so that over time, the money from your dividend is paying you dividends too. Even better, unlike bonds or certificates of deposit, CDs, high-yielding stocks can raise their dividends. You can find many companies that have done so for 30, 40, 50 years or more. And unlike these supposedly risk-free investments, which are actually somewhat risky when you take into account the risk of missing opportunities to make money, dividend-paying stocks can go higher. You don't just give them your money and you get back your money. You get income plus capital appreciation, a delectable combo. Do you really want to invest the meager proceeds of a five-year treasury note into another note? Do you think that's how you build wealth? Pshaw. Remember when writers used to use the word, they would write pshaw? I think they stopped because no one ever said it. I'm bringing it back also besides dividends on this show. Now, I know it's become hip to believe that it's impossible to beat the market, meaning the benchmarks like the S&P 500, or at least impossible for regular investors to do so. Believe me, I know what's hip. The CalSils. Perry Como, maybe Jerry Vale. Okay, so I know what's hip. Anyway, the line here is that if you can't outsmart the market, you might as well just own the whole darn thing through an index fund, right? Somehow this has become the position of nearly every single member of the intelligentsia and the pundocracy. It is the conventional wisdom, and anyone who goes against it is treated as a snake oil salesman. Somehow the public's been brainwashed into thinking that index funds, especially S&P 500 funds, like the SPY, that's the symbol, are the only intelligent way to invest. Yet we know for a fact that stocks with higher dividends have consistently outperformed that benchmark. allowing you to beat the benchmark, the S&P 500, and done much better than non-dividend payers. Now, Jeremy Siegel, who is a genuine stock sage, he looked at all the data from 1957 through 2009, and he found that that the 100 stocks in the S&P with the highest dividends gave you an average annual return, including dividend reinvestment, of 12.5%, almost 2.5 percentage points better than the average annual return you would have gotten from the S&P as a whole, and 3.7 percentage points better than the 100 lowest yielding stocks in the S&P 500. And this Wharton professor points out that that little difference, boy, does it make a big difference over time. There's absolutely no reason you have to invest in the entire market. When you're looking for an alternative to bonds or a saving account, an S&P 500 index fund just doesn't make the cut. And that leads to many people writing stocks off entirely, and I don't blame them because it's not what we should be owning. You are allowed to own individual stocks. We know that high yielders with dividend reinvestment have historically done better than the market as a whole. What's the point? Don't be brainwashed like the Manchurian bond candidate into thinking that index funds are the only smart ways to own stocks. And bonds are the only safe place to put your money. You can find individual high-yielding stocks that give you a much better return than bonds. And that's without even taking into account dividends, tax advantage status. And I just do it every night. You just watch the show, you'll get them. Oh, and high-yielding stocks, they also get something called yield support, which is like a cushion or a parachute in nasty down markets, because the yield goes higher as the share price goes lower, right? It's just mathematical. It's arithmetic, attracting more buyers. They also give you some protection from short sellers. Short sellers hate to short anything with a sizable dividend. Why? Because the shorts have to pay that dividend. They borrowed the stock. To whoever they've lent that stock to, they've got to pay that dividend. Another huge plus. They don't short these stocks. That's why I devoted an entire chapter, Jim Cramer's Getting Back to Even, which I regard as the ultimate guide to surviving in tough, volatile markets. One that's doing better now than when it first came out because the book set up to profit from this current madness. Whole chapter to understanding what dividends are, why dividends are really exciting, and let's take a look at a few examples, a cohort of stocks that not only gave you great yields, they also delivered huge outperformance. I'm talking about what I call the accidentally high yielders. Stocks that used to have small to mid-sized yields, but because their share prices have gotten pounded so hard, these yields have finally become high. Stock goes lower, yields go higher. And they didn't even need dividend boosts. Remember, the yield is the dividend payout divided by the price. So as the price falls, the yield increases. Just as when prices rise, the yield falls. These stocks have been some of the best investing opportunities out there. How about a classic smokestack industrial? Emerson Electric. November 11th of 2008, it had fallen to a price where it was yielding 4.1%, something it had done less than a handful of times. Over the next 6 months, Emerson sprung back, gave you an 18% gain. S&P, up 1.4% over the same period. Something similar happened with Honeywell. When its yield broke through 4% level at about the same time, early November of 2008, if you bought it down there, you caught a quick 47% run 2 months.
That was easy.
Companies with long track records of paying high dividends, I'm talking about AT&T and Verizon, or Con Ed, First Niagara, Hudson City, or ultra-high yielders like Kinder Morgan Energy Partners, KMP, are also a must in your portfolio because of the incredibly great power of compounding reinvested dividends. Here's the bottom line. Listen to me. Index funds are not the only way to own stocks. They're the brainless way. The stocks in the S&P 500 with the highest dividends have historically given you a significantly better return than the S&P 500 as a whole. Go ahead. Hate index funds. But don't hate all stocks. You'll miss too many great opportunities to make money in the dividend names. To paraphrase the late Carl Malden in those American Express ads, dividends. Don't leave your portfolio without them. Stay with Cramer.